Thanks, David. It's Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. As promised, we're going to talk about the Chicago teacher situation. Chicago Teachers Union and the Chicago Public Schools are negotiating a new contract, and if contract is not done in due time, we may see a teacher strike in Chicago Public Schools, which is never a good thing, especially in our first year for Mayor Lightfoot. Cassie Walker-Burke is the Bureau Chief for Chalkbeat Chicago, which is one of the great places to find all things education, not just about Chicago public schools, but about the suburbs and other places. And she joins me now. Cassie, great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's get right into this. As I said at the beginning of this, this is really an existential argument. We've so known labor strife to be all about money. It always has been about that. And so when you see the union continue to bypass or say no to salary increases and benefit increases, you realize this is one of those cases where this is not about money.
Well, I think it's a really interesting kind of moment for the city of Chicago, because we have been conditioned, I think, as residents to view strikes through the lens of money and what are people asking for. And I think the union has really, the Chicago Teachers Union has really tried to get out the message that this is actually for us. Pay, okay, yes. I mean, they're not saying it's not about pay, so let's be clear there. But it's really about the conditions in the schools, the working conditions in the schools. And they say our teachers feel undervalued, and they feel like they don't have the support they need to deliver the best education for the children of Chicago.
And a lot of that has to do with the resources. We see this with social workers in the schools, nurses, but also classroom sizes and just the overall well-being of some of the neighborhood schools. Do they have a point? I have a hard time in this, because everyone is throwing numbers and trying to, feels like both sides are trying to manipulate the graphs. I see so many graphs. But I want to know, does the Chicago Teachers Union have a point? When are they understaffed, or do they feel that they don't get the necessary resources to do the job?
Well, this is what I think is interesting. I think that both the city, Mayor Lightfoot and also Schools Chief Janice Jackson and the Chicago Teachers Union actually agree on the big issues. There's not a dispute that if Chicago could lower class sizes, it would. That Chicago would like to have more social workers, more nurses in the schools. The mayor has even pledged to do so over 5 years. I think what they disagree on is the fundamental avenue to get to those issues. We know, what are the solutions, and in what time frame are we going to be able to implement that? And lastly, how are we going to pay for it? Which is a big question.
Yeah, it's the biggest question. And I guess for me, it seemed like a natural conflict with Karen Lewis and Rahm Emanuel, because at the last teacher strike, it was coming off of school closings. But it was also Mayor Emanuel was like, hey, this is what we're going to do, and I want a longer class, and I want teachers to work harder. There was just a lot of bluster and a lot of hyperbole being thrown around, and you could see why teachers were not fans. A little different when it comes to this case, because Mayor Lightfoot ran on the concept of giving more to schools, and she even said that she wanted to make it a more equitable playing field for neighborhood schools and her budget proposals for CPS. So you're right, the fact that there isn't this conflict, this inherent conflict that we've seen in past regimes.
Right, and I don't think Lightfoot is quite the character of Rahm Emanuel. I mean, that's the understatement of the year, right, if you live in Chicago. But I mean, if you recall, Rahm Emanuel used the F word, you know, to Karen Lewis, and that was one of the things that pretty much guaranteed there was going to be a strike in 2012. Lightfoot's just a very different a mayor, and she's coming out of a very different campaign. Now, granted, the union did support her opponent, but, you know, we know Lightfoot won essentially by a landslide. And so it is this very interesting moment in Chicago where you have a progressive mayor pledging neighborhood level investments, but saying, trust me, it needs to be on this certain timetable. And then you have a union saying, hey,
we're done trusting
you know. and to be fair, 5 years in the life of a child is significant. That matters. So a child who's going without a nurse, who needs critical care, a child who maybe has experienced trauma and needs a social worker, that time frame does matter for that child.
And, you know, I see this with police officers, talk about this all the time when it comes to police budgets and police negotiations, that when a mayor pledges, you know, number of police officers to the street, there's always this argument, this counter argument that says, yeah, that's to make up for the ones that have been cut. And we're to say that you're adding police officers, you're manipulating, or you're just misleading. Is it similar in this case when you see this?
That's a really good point.
Are social workers and nurses and others, when you see, hey, we're going to do this over 5 years, you can get them, is it really coming from a place where they where the last administration or the last 10, 15 years you've seen guts?
Well, that's what keeps happening at these board meetings. You have, speaking of charts and graphs and bar charts, so many bar charts. But the, you know, the union has a point there by saying, you know, you guys pledged to add X number of social workers and nurses to schools last year, and we haven't seen those increases. Where are those people? And how are we supposed to trust you that this is going to happen again when we're not seeing it? And the city's response is essentially that they can't just manufacture a whole lot of people out of thin air to come work in the schools, that there are serious pipeline issues with some of the positions that they've pledged, and that they've had a hard time hiring for some of those jobs. So, you know, it does get, when you talk about bar charts, there tend to be a lot of them that fly back and forth. But I do think the fundamental thing for Chicagoans to understand is that the discussion here is bigger than pay, and that essentially there's some agreement on what the big issues are, but that not necessarily how to get to the solutions.
It's an interesting dilemma because, like you said, we're programmed to think it's all about money. And when you do think about it, because it seems that there have been a lot of handshake deals or promises, and it may not be from this administration, but from past administrations, that has not come to fruition. We've seen this. This is how government works. I mean, there's been so many handshake deals and saying we're going to pay the pensions down, and then they go, well, we don't, we're going to kick it down the road. And it seems that the union in this case, in this negotiating moment, is saying we want it in writing. We want it right now this way because we don't trust you, not necessarily you, but government anymore.
Right. And I think the other condition that you have that's playing out here in the background is you have a statewide teacher shortage. In Chicago, we haven't seen quite the tightening that some districts have in rural Illinois. But certainly there are shortages here in bilingual educators, special education teachers. And you definitely see some retention issues at schools. You see the average Chicago school losing about half of its teachers every 5 years. And so that impacts kids. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, one of the things you hear the union saying after, you know, the bluster and the aggressive talk is that the working conditions for teachers are not sustainable. And what happens when those conditions aren't sustainable to the kids? Mm-hmm. And I think that is a really important question to look at and to continue to examine. And you can't really have this conversation without thinking about a profession that has been, I think, over the past decades, undervalued.
Yeah. And to just put the shoe on the other foot, too, when you see, and I think this is what CPS's move is, to put a website out that says, take a look at our offer, Chicago. We want to make it as transparent as possible, with ruffle the feathers of the union. But you see an offer that makes Chicago teachers, not necessarily every single one, but some of the tenured teachers, some of the highest paid teachers in the country. And so it does make you, as a Chicagoan and a taxpayer, kind of scratch your head about, like, well, is that the right course? Is that where we should be going? Especially when we just saw the mayor on TV talking about how we're going to have the biggest budget hole in the history of the city coming up here next month.
Well, and you also have a district that is about 80% low income. So are you making the argument to parents that they are going to have to find alternative arrangements for their children, that the city is going to be, you know, paying more for the teachers, when many of those parents don't make that? Mm-hmm. A 16% raise over 5 years for many of the parents of children in Chicago public schools
would
be considerable.
Room, right? That's a considerable raise.
And when you talk
raise.
About the 16% is really a cost of living raise. And when you talk about, they call them steps and lanes. So those are the basically teachers get more money for years of service and additional credentialing. Then you're talking about the city says up to 24% in some cases across 5 years. So for a low income parent, that's substantial. So I do wonder about
the optics,
just kind of the optics of all of it.
Now, the union, which I thought was interesting, they were upset about this website that came out. And they said, why don't we just live stream the bargaining table? Why don't we show the negotiations in full? And was that to essentially tell Chicagoans that what you see on the website isn't necessarily what the city is doing at the bargaining table?
It was such an interesting one-up of the city. And in fact, the notice from the union about, hey, let's live stream the bargaining came out even before the website was actually officially up. And so there was sort of this moment of like, wait, what? But, you know, Chalkbeat, so we're a national news nonprofit. We're in Chicago. Go Chicago. We've been here for a year, but we're in seven cities in all. And in Denver, for example, where there was also a strike, we've covered a strike very recently, that bargaining does happen in the open. And it is interesting to think about what that means for the public I mean, these are really complicated issues, but it also how we cover these, how we understand these issues, and how we get past the talking points. And maybe not just as the press, which it's our job to explain it, but as the average taxpayer.
So we had last week a strike authorization vote, and we saw teachers almost unanimously say we're in.
94%, yeah.
So tomorrow's a big day. What happens tomorrow? That the teachers, the union delegation is going to meet, and what do they do tomorrow?
Right, so 700 members of the House of Delegates meet tomorrow. It's a closed meeting, so we can't get in. but what they essentially do is they set a potential date for a strike. And the earliest teachers could walk out is October 7th. Mm. It is probably more likely they'd wait till after Columbus Day, but we'll wait and see.
Which would be October 15th, so pay attention to that, middle of the month here. Cassie Walker-Burks, my guest. She is the bureau chief at Chalkbeat Chicago. Find it online. It's a great site. When we come back, let's talk selective enrollment.
Okay.
That is an amazing topic to talk about that I think a lot of Chicago parents, their ears perk up that we want to talk about this, especially when it pertains to high schools. Coming up here on Extension 720, so stay with us. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Cassie Walker-Burke. She's a bureau chief for Chalkbeat Chicago. My guest tonight is we talk a little bit about the news of the Chicago teacher strike, but also this month is the month that admissions begin for selective enrollment high schools, for the applications, for eighth graders to say, these are the schools I want to go. The way it works, and it is a crazy, if you're not familiar with this, if you live in the suburbs or you don't have to deal with this, Chicago has created a successful program where selective enrollment high schools are test-in schools, and you can choose and you essentially get in or you don't get in based on a number of factors. But it is causing a ton of stress, and not just this year, but the years past and the years to come. The Tribune had a big article this week that was just about what is tougher, getting into selective enrollment high schools in Chicago or college. What do you say to that? I mean, that's not how it's supposed to be, right?
Well, the Tribune article sort of answers its own question not far down, and the answer is no. And the answer essentially is no. It is not harder to get into a high school than it is to get into Harvard in Chicago. That is a myth. And, you know, I think, and they have one of the researchers who's really looked at Chicago's process answer that question. So this is rooted in fact here. But essentially, the story then goes on to look at some of the percentages. And I think that's where this is grounded, right? So your first choice selective enrollment high school, 16% of kids essentially get their first choice.
Hmm. But 16% get their first choice.
Right, 16%. So that's a low percentage.
That's
like
low.
Those odds are not
low.
Great. As a parent, that's not great. I don't want to hear those. I know. We both have kids in Chicago Public Schools, so we both understand those
16%,
odds are not amazing.
Yeah.
But I think here again, the context matters. That should be our tagline at Chalkbeat. The context matters. But the context does matter because as a student, so backing up just a little bit, there are basically 250 programs that students can apply for and more than 100 schools. 11 of those are selective enrollment, but another 22 of those are international baccalaureate programs. Mm-hmm. International baccalaureate was created for the children of British diplomats. It's pretty rigorous.
And so the idea being that there's 11 selective enrollments, it's a little bit of marketing because I think all Chicago parents are like, I want to be in those schools because those are the schools that are considered the quote unquote Harvard high schools. And,
right,
and that's going to be
right.
Your Walter Payton. That's going to be your Whitney Young,
your Jones. Right,
so
right.
There's 11 of those that everyone in the city is vying for first. But as your article points out, there are a lot of programs beyond that that are still as relevant and as point to success beyond
exactly.
Just,
yeah. And so then when you say, okay, kids can apply to up to 6 selective enrollment schools and up to 20 of what they call the choice programs, which includes IB and STEM and all that good stuff, then the odds go way up. So then you have students who get maybe one of their first three choices, the odds start to go up to above 50%. And then how many got matched with, you know, more choices on their list? Then you're going up to 90%. So that's where the argument about does selective or, you know, Chicago high schools harder to get into in college? That's where it falls apart.
Yeah. Okay. So this is, we talk generally about school systems. And this is one that Chicago has, it's been somewhat controversial just because the selective enrollment schools have become such magnets. It's not the right word because there are magnet schools, but the idea they're bringing in the best of the best, but at the expense of neighborhood schools, because we're seeing more and more neighborhood schools be under enrolled. We're seeing obviously when the mayor closed schools in 2011, and you know even this year there are four
high schools
that closed.
Right.
So there is, for as much as we've seen growth when it comes to the super schools in Chicago, we've seen just, I would say, regression in some of the neighborhood schools.
Well, I think there's been a pendulum swing there. So you heard during the campaign Lightfoot talking about wanting to invest more in neighborhood schools. You've also heard Janice Jackson, the school's chief of Chicago, talk about what her administration is doing to invest more in neighborhood schools. And I brought up earlier this International Baccalaureate program, which I think is a really interesting example because those programs are in neighborhood schools. And that's one of the ways the district is trying to root, you know, these programs in neighborhood schools and make them more attractive to families. And I think it's fascinating that the research for IB essentially shows that if a kid just misses a cutoff in a selective enrollment, research from the University of Chicago, which, you know, pretty smart place, smart people go there. research from the University of Chicago says that the academic outcomes for that student are actually better in the IB program. So you have higher rates of college persistence, higher test scores. So I think that's just a very interesting sort of phenomenon that we don't understand as parents.
I guess, but we're all human beings, or maybe we're all human beings in the rat race. But this concept of we want the best for our kids and we want to be where all the action's at. So I don't know if that just became developed over time with parents, but there's a little bit of caste system that goes into what school you get into, regardless of what the academic standing is.
Well, and there's also research that shows that, right? That a school identity, you know, in Chicago, what is one of the first questions people are going to ask you? It's probably, are you from Chicago? And what high school did you go to? And so it becomes this sort of identity, this calling card that we all carry. And I do think that's a really important point. But I also think that high schools and schools themselves have not been able to market. The budgets have been so tight. They're not able to tell really their own story. And I don't think the district does a great job, actually, of all, you know, marketing these alternatives to parents. So in some ways it's an information vacuum, and then we just kind of fill it in by word of mouth at the playground, the baseball field, and the grocery store.
Right. And you know, again, do you see a time, maybe not with this administration or in where they scrap this concept of selective enrollments and try to put the money back into the neighborhood schools and it acts like every other municipality in the state of Illinois where you have a school you go to inside of a boundary and that's where you go?
I don't know. They're so popular. I mean, the selective enrollments. I mean, I think that you see definitely a lot of parents, especially a lot of Northside parents, who are the ones who are first in line to get those applications in. So, you know, are you going to dismantle a system that people have essentially, you know, been trying to figure out how to work? I don't know. That's a tough question. But I think that the city has instead of floating that idea, the policy sort of side is saying, okay, no, let's really invest in these neighborhood schools and let's see what we can do about trying to bring more students back. But I mean, again, the enrollment issue. I mean, a lot of what we talk about in Chicago Public Schools goes back to the fact that the district is losing students every year. And so that creates a fundamental tension, right? Like, if we're going to invest more in these neighborhood schools, who's going to come to them when we're essentially losing students?
Are you going to see more of what they just did in Inglewood, where they closed the four schools and made the one new one? Now, the big thing there was that enrollment was up, for a freshman class for this brand new school in Inglewood,
400 kids.
Yeah. So that was essentially tells us that if you build a new state-of-the-art tech center school
and market it,
the neighborhood will come.
I think that's a really interesting case study, and I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in some other neighborhoods where you see tiny high schools with fewer than 200 students that are really struggling. What happens if you do try to and bring the community in on helping create the plan? I mean, I think that's another big takeaway from the school closings, the massive school closings that Chicago underwent a few years ago. Where is the community conversation? What does the community want? And how do you bring in the community voices to help have a stake in the future of what happens?
Yeah. So the takeaway from your article, which is on Chalk Beat Chicago right now, is just apply to more than one school. It's so surprising to see that people are like, I want to go to Whitney Young. And they just click Whitney Young, and then they don't get into Whitney Young. And they're like, now what?
Right, exactly.
But it does seem like there are programs, or if you look at the article, it goes down a line to so many different options than just picking one school.
Right, just pick one school. And another thing is that several high schools, many, many high schools have multiple programs, and those are separate applications. I mean, it's one application portal, but you kind of click a different box. And so if you know you really want to go to a certain high school and they have multiple programs, hey, apply to all of them.
Yeah. You know? And if this was 1995, you just call your alderman. They got rid of that, right?
Well, actually, there is still principal discretion at the 11 selective enrollment high school.
That's
a very small number, but yes.
That's an interesting part. I mean,
it's still Chicago,
Justin. I think it was a Tribune as well that was talking about the Chicago way, as you talk about the bribery scandals we saw in colleges, and obviously was made famous by the celebrities who went to jail. But that Chicago has something a little bit similar in the way that principals kind of talk to principals, and if you have the ear of a principal, you can get it.
Well, we it is Chicago after all.
Cassie Walker-Burke is the bureau chief at Chalkbeat Chicago, which is a great read. Check it out. And Cassie, thanks so much for coming and talking about strike and, of course, the selective enrollment.
Yep.